Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, June 25th, 2018. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How's it going, John?
I'm good to go. Good morning.
Awesome. I'm so glad you are here. And Andrew Orr, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Good to be here.
It is awesome to have you here. And let's just jump right in and let's take a look at something that both of you got really excited about when the topic came up before the show, which is artificial intelligence and specifically, what are the perils of artificial intelligence? And John, you actually wrote about this too.
Yeah, this is a complicated subject. There's more meat on the bones here than there first appears to be. On June 20th, I wrote an article called The Real Threat from AI Technology, Not Knowing How It Thinks. And that article was the result of a brainstorm that happened after I read an article at The Verge, How Science Fiction is Training Us to Ignore the Real Threat Posed by AI. And in that article, the premise was that science fiction has lured us into being concerned about intelligent agents and intelligent androids that could be a physical danger to us, because that is the most obvious storytelling technique. And you can go into some detail about how, you know, we evolved on this planet as creatures who had to make fast decisions, were constantly on alert to avoid being eaten, surviving physically on the planet for the lifetime of our species, which is, you know, roughly 2-4 million years, something like that. Whereas logical thinking, academics, mathematics didn't arise until about 5,000 years ago. And so we're better at our physical dealing with threats than we are psychological and intellectual manipulations and prowess. Mm-hmm. And so movies about AI tend to focus on the physical threats of robots and don't focus so much on a harder story to tell, and that is the alien processes that go on in the minds of AIs. The goal of an AI is to make it independent and make it able to converse. And what's saved us so far is that our conversations with AIs are rather on a stumbling level, and we know their weaknesses, and we don't carry on extended conversations with them, and we don't see them as equivalent intelligent entities. We see them as machines. You know, there's machine learning going on, there's neural networks going on, but we don't really engage the AIs the way we would engage another human. And in order to make these AIs work, there has to be these learning algorithms, which sometimes result in mental processes that are unfathomable, that we don't really understand, can't be cataloged or diagnosed. And when you marry that with something like Google Duplex, with the verbal ability to engage with us, what you end up having is you have an intelligent agent whose thinking processes aren't really well understood because of the way they're designed. And the result is that we have to be very cautious about the way we communicate with these beings. Go ahead.
So is this like a concern about what the motives of an artificial intelligence may be when it's interacting with us?
Well, it could be that too. It could be that, you know, these we always tended to think of intelligent agent robots in science fiction of the past as being self-encapsulated and being focused especially on the customer. But the processing demands are so great these days that a lot of the processing goes on in server farms. And that's an opportunity for not only losing track of how it thinks, but also inserting certain agenda because the developer has control over it. These are built by tech giants like Google and Amazon, to a lesser extent, Apple, because of their focus on privacy and the control over the AI. But the purpose of Amazon's AI is basically to assist you to live better by buying things.
Yes.
And the purpose of Google's Home is to help you live better by learning more about what your needs are and understanding you better. And so there's always going to be the insertions of some agenda. And so when you have this agenda subtly put in behind the scenes, combined with neural net processes that you don't fully understand, you're going to have billions of people engaging billions of AIs without really understanding how it's thinking and why it's thinking what it's thinking.
All right. Let me just finish up here. Okay.
And there's one more element here. Humans have all evolved on this planet together. There may be different countries, different languages, different clothing. People look different, but we still all have the same human needs and passions, and we've all evolved the same way on the planet. So when we engage another human being, no matter what they look like, and even if we're speaking to them in another language, we have a feel for how other human beings feel and think and need and want and how they want to communicate with us. But with these AIs, we don't have that. It's a totally new brain. It's like an alien mind. And so the dangers of being wrapped up in that mind and its ability to influence us has great potential. Okay.
Okay. So the concern that you brought up that I think is something that we can't work around, and so it's potentially a big problem just in general. You talked about the motivation for making these different AIs and what the intent of the company was, what their objective was. So in the case of Amazon, it's ultimately so you buy more things. In the case of Google, it's ultimately so they can collect more data on you. Just taking it down to like really simple terms. So aren't we, just by the nature of being human, in a position where any AI we create, we are creating with an agenda?
Right. I mean, I think science fiction stories in the past romantically visualized that robot companions were obeying Isaac Asimov's three laws of robotics, that they were totally focused on the consumer. They were self-contained. They were idealistic companions designed to serve and help the human being as an educational and operational assistant. But that's not the way the technology is evolving. It's all driven by very large companies with very large financial interests in the product that they create.
And very clear agendas.
Yep.
Okay. So, John, you hit on another aspect that I see as a problem. And I have a question that I'm going to pose. And Andrew, I'm going to totally put you on the spot and ask for your opinion first. Mm-hmm. So, John, you said part of the problem is that when you're interacting with a human, even if you don't speak the same language, you can learn a lot about the intent of what they're saying just by being with them. Because we communicate with more than just words. I mean, we have a very complex communication system.
Body language.
Right. So here's the question, and Andrew, I'm totally excited to see what you come up with without any preparation at all. What if we were putting AIs into, like android bodies, humanoid type bodies, or at least giving them some sort of physical manifestation that they can control so that they can give us those other parts of language, the unspoken parts, the movements? Would that make it easier to interact with these technologies and to understand them? And then also to be able to judge for ourselves if the motives of the AI seem to be true, or if they're trying to obfuscate something.
Yeah, I think it would make a lot easier to interact with it, because I think there's a big difference between an AI and a computer, which is a brain in a vat, that philosophical thing. Mm-hmm. And then an AI in a body is totally different. I thought I remember reading a long time ago, I don't remember the details, but psychologically, you like a mind needs a body. Like, a body is part of, you know, consciousness, I think. And I think that plays a big role in how this AI would function and relate to other entities. So I think that would make a huge difference if there was a body involved.
All right, John, what do you think?
Well, that relates to what I was talking to with Dr. Ayanna Howard, the roboticist, on last week's Background Mode, and she talked about robots that are designed to help children of various physical or mental needs, and the key to designing the robot is trust. And so her research, one of her research areas, is how to design a robot that acts in a trustworthy way. And so that's probably a whole science fiction novel right there, is how do you design a robot that earns the trust of humans and acts in a human and trustworthy way and gives off certain body signals and talks to you in certain behavioral patterns that induce trust? And then how do you avoid the temptation to abuse that trust?
And I'm already taking this three steps down the road with a sci-fi theme to it. If we take one of the things you said early on, John, which is that, you know, we may not even know or understand how these artificial intelligences are thinking, how would we know for certain that an artificial intelligence, especially with some sort of humanoid type body, so it can give us mannerisms and non-verbal cues, how would we know that it's not manipulating us and lying to us?
Mm-hmm. You have to have a conversation like you would with a human being. I mean, it's like a dinner party with friends.
There's some people that are really good at lying and really good at manipulating.
Well, for example, you say to your robot or your android, well, I'm getting ready to go to the polling booth. And you happen to casually mention who you're going to be voting for, and the robot engages you in a discussion. And you've had discussions with the robot in the past, like you maybe have with your spouse or your children or friends. And then you start asking the robot, well, why do you feel this way? What? Explain to me your thinking. And the robot has a whole wealth of different goals and life experiences and kinds of thinking and logical processes that are pretty much alien compared to how you think and could be influential. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like we went through with Cambridge Analytica, you know, influencing people with fake news and certain kinds of well-placed ads and so on for their own effect. So how do you design a robot that has human values and human compassion and human relatable characteristics that doesn't end up overpowering you, influencing you, directing you? How do you do that? Human beings are, you know, born on this planet along with us and go through a certain kind of life cycle. You know, they grow up, they go to kindergarten, they start being socialized. Everything they know about how to deal with people, they learned in kindergarten. They go through the social dating process, you know, and adoption of life values and getting it, going to college, learning how to be self-sustaining. You know, we all grow up and live on this planet in the same kind of culture and society. Do we train robots to go through that same process? Do robots have to attend kindergarten with us and sort of evolve with us? I mean, just the scenarios are just mind-boggling. Because if you think you can design a robot that has your own custom algorithms in it and just put your AI into a body and start delivering it, you know, shipping it out on Amazon Prime, it's on your front doorstep and you only pay $30,000 for it, you know, how much experience does it take? How many thousands of hours of training does the robot have to go through in simulations in order to adopt and become human? And if you don't think that's a goal, then if it's not a goal, then what you're dealing with is an alien entity. And we have very little insight on how to deal with these alien minds.
I have a feeling a lot of our experience and insight is going to come from things that go wrong. You know, not necessarily like catastrophically wrong, but things that go wrong with the early attempts, because my guess is what we will see early on, the sorts of things we're seeing now are just the tip of the iceberg.
Maybe the android, maybe I have a good idea there. Okay. I hadn't thought of that before. Maybe the alien mind has to be accustomed, acclimated. Maybe the process of before you ship the robot, it goes through 100 million iterations in a virtual reality environment where it lives 100 human lifetimes in a sort of a microcosm world. And by the time it emerges, after an hour, living 100 million human lifetimes in a human culture, it emerges from the simulation with a set of values that give it the mental equipment it needs to interact with humans in a proper way.
Man, I hope it comes out of there with empathy as opposed to disdain.
I don't know of any plans on the drawing board for that, but maybe somebody will listen to this podcast and say, that's a good idea.
All right. Well, and then at some point, we'll be getting robots that have gone through the Martellaro certification.
Yeah. What do you think, Andrew? I hadn't thought of that before this podcast.
I'm game. I would love to see that in a controlled environment. Yeah.
Maybe a complex simulation.
Yeah. All right. So we don't have much time left, but there's another thing I wanted to hit today. And it's this whole thing about gaming addiction. Because it just seems like this is a topic that comes up over and over in the news. And gaming addiction has been classified as a disease now. Is that right?
By the United Nations World Health Organization, yes.
So, all right. Well, we have like 3 or 4 minutes left. So can we sort this out? Because my knee-jerk reaction is, are you serious? Gaming is now classified as an addictive disease?
Well, there's 2 parts to it. One is that it doesn't try to perform failed research in the past, which is probably deficient, on whether excessive gaming causes violent tendencies. That's a whole different subject. What this does is it looks at a symptomatic basis. A person becomes obsessed. They lose control over their onset and frequency and duration and of what they're going to be doing. The gaming takes priority in their life to the point where they lose interest in their daily activities and making contributions back. There's a continued escalation of the gaming that causes negative consequences in their lives. And these are behavioral and health symptoms that can be identified by observation. And part 2 of it is so that because it can be classified as a disease, it can qualify for health insurance.
Okay. So the first part sounds a lot to me like falling in love. Same sort of patterns. The second part, all right, now I think we're getting to it. For at least some people, this is the business side of it, where if you can classify something for insurance, now you'll get a lot of other people interested.
And get help.
So are they saying that companies that are developing video games are designing them with the intent to hook people, to get them addicted,
There's a mention of that in the article. The tactics and techniques of award points and escalation of levels and behavior is designed to titillate and cause obsessive behavior in how you approach the game. That thirst for achievement and elevated levels of performance, self-gratification, and so on, it's not a happenstance process. That's a very carefully thought out psychological process and how points and levels are awarded.
All right, Andrew, what do you think?
Well, when John first brought it up, in that meeting on Friday, my first thought was, why, like, gaming addiction? It seems to me that they're blaming video games when they should be focusing on addiction itself. But I agree with John in that if you look at the symptoms, then it becomes obvious that it's a problem. Because I think the general consensus in psychology is that if it's something that causes significant distress in your life or other people's lives, then it's something that needs to be worked on. And addiction especially causes distress. So whether that addiction is video game addiction or something else, it's important to, you know, be able to classify it better and understand it and study it.
Plus improper eating, improper sleep, improper social behavior as well.
Yeah.
All right. So I know we're out of time, and yet here I am dropping another question in your lap. All right. It's probably more of a statement, but with a statement that will elicit a response. All right. So the whole process that you've described, the list of symptoms, I see people on a regular basis walking around. Everywhere they go, they've got a book in their hand. They're reading it every chance they get. They'll sit down at a meal and the book is out and they're reading the book. And so they're not socializing with other people. They're just reading. And it seems like in many ways it is consuming them because they're just reading all the time. Is that addiction? Do we need to have a program where we help people not read so much?
Let me answer that. First order, yes. And the second thing I wanted to make sure I got in was that I, in my personal opinion, and I know this is a vast subject and I'm not an expert in the area, but in my opinion, one of the driving factors behind this is a loss of sense of responsibility of contributing in society. When you raise kids, say, on a ranch and they're responsible for a horse or their animals, or you raise them in a spiritual environment where they're going on servant trips and they're doing home building for people who are in need, you have a society and a culture of contribution where people learn that it's important to do something positive, that automatically eliminates these kinds of obsessions. But I think we've gotten into a society, in my opinion, again, where we're so inwardly focused as consumers as opposed to contributors. And we spend a lot of time, as you know, with our echoes and with our computers and with our books. And books in a scholastic sense are okay in an environment where you're trying to learn something. But we're focused on our phones. We're focused on being consumers. You know, we're focused on our carrier plan. And that kind of inward consumer focus leads to all kinds of problems, whether it's obsessive behaviors with games or whether it's lack of being productive or antisocial behavior. So that's my opinion on the thing.
All right. Well, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. But before we go, listeners, I'm really curious, how do you feel about gaming addiction and the growing concern that gaming is addictive in many cases? I want to know what you think. So let me know. You can hit me up on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can send me emails, observations@macobserver.com. And of course, you can leave comments in the show notes. I'm looking forward to hearing what you think. So please let me know. And so John, thank you for being here today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Andrew, I am so glad you're here. Thanks for being here.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.